ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers. There are jewelry stores, then there's Zadok's. KFNC, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hour number two is underway. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Tuesday in Houston, Texas. Astros tied at four with the Marlins. Of Florida or Miami or wherever they are identifying themselves lately.
Thank you, Charlie Blank, Joel Palillo.
I wouldn't go that far, but if you want to talk about it, we're here.
I don't.
Okay. The Combine getting going in Indy. Lance Zierlein there covering it for NFL Network and, of course, as he does for Gal Media because he's on the bench. News coming out of there. Bears committed to Mitchell Trubisky as the starter in 2020. Yay or nay?
I would nay.
I'm a yay because they're
of course you are.
Exactly, because I'm a Packer fan and I think that's great. If I'm the Bears with the rest of that roster of talent, I'm like, wow, that's not a good move.
So what changed? Because I thought their unbelievable belief in Mitchell Trubisky had kind of faded away. What happened?
Let me tell you. One, the general manager didn't lose his job. So, therefore, the guy that drafted him and gave up picks to get him is going to try and pull the whole general manager move of all moves, which is it's my guy. If I'm going to die by the sword, I'm going to die going down, letting him fight it out. So, that's one thing. He didn't lose his job, so Mitch is there. And he's still under contract at a pretty good money. They're not going to cut him. So, I would say that he'd be in the – I would just let people know, he's – the plan is he's going to be our starter, but then leave the door open in case you did want to bring in one of the veterans that doesn't find a gig, whether it's a Mariota, maybe more on the cheap as your backup slash could fill in, a la what happened in Tennessee last year when Mariota lost his job. Or if a big guy comes off the books for Carolina like Cam Newton, he'd be a perfect fit.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're not doing it through the draft. So
no.
That's probably part of the reason why they're like, yeah, we're going to do this. I mean, the fact that they gave the Raiders their first round pick this year, which would have been, I think, 14, says that they don't have the clout right now to go out and draft a quarterback of the future. Do you want to get a retread or do you want to get a, you know, take a chance on another guy or and you've already invested in Trubisky?
Plus, the last time you had a chance to draft a quarterback, you traded up and took the wrong one.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, with Khalil Mack in his prime and so many guys that are ready to win now, I just don't think they have the time to waste by taking a kid that you've got a season and get ready to play on the next level for a couple years.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. Also, the Giants have said they're open for business to trade the number four pick.
Yep. And I don't know if that's the smartest thing either, but okay.
I mean, I think that's good because now the floodgates are open that they'll start throwing offers at you that you can consider. But I think that most teams that want to trade up right now are trading up to get either Tua or Joe Burrow.
Uh-huh.
And the way it's looking to pan out as of now, Washington doesn't need a quarterback at two. They're probably going to take Chase Young because they already have Dwayne Haskins. So 1 and 3 are where the quarterbacks go. So 4 wouldn't be high enough if you trade up to get one of the two guys you might be after.
You think the Lions take a quarterback?
Well, the rumor is they're shopping Stafford and that they're ready to press the reset button. So that's the case. The Dolphins also have said to be looking at Tua if he falls.
And at 5, usually, though, you're going to have to be a team that has either multiple picks in the first round to move up to the 4 spot. But then, like you said, is it going to be worth it? Is the guy you want going to be there? If you think the Dolphins are going to take your guy, then obviously that's what the Giants are maybe hoping for, is that someone gets scared that the Dolphins grab a Tua. And, you know, so you look at teams like the Raiders that have multiple picks in the first round and multiple picks in the draft period. But the Dolphins, they still have – they have that 18 pick as well that they got from the Steelers. So they're in pretty good shape as well. it's going to be interesting to see who does move up. And do you think that Tua is worth moving up for?
A lot of people do. Now, we're going to find out because now he's supposed to get medical clearance.
How big are his hands? That's all I want
to
know.
We'll get to that. Tua's expected to get full medical clearance by March the 9th. Mm-hmm. So that's when teams can start, you know, working him over with the doctors, working him out to see where he's at. But evidently, if he's going to be ready by March 9th, the recovery and the diagnosis should be a lot better than what it was when they were trying to guess how severe it was when he went down before the surgery.
Yeah.
So he'll be back. And then, as you mentioned, Joe Burrow, a couple things out of his camp is he met with the media at the combine. One thing is he says, now I'll play for whoever drafts me. He said he's close enough where he grew up to the Bengals that he could drive home for dinner on some nights. So he did not ever rule out the fact that he wouldn't play for the Bengals. He was just saying that he had control of the situation. But now he's saying, you know, obviously, which he has to, he'll go wherever he's drafted.
Yeah.
But the bigger issue, as you mentioned, came out yesterday when word trickled out that he has 9-inch hands. And people started wondering if that's a problem. And people started over-evaluating. And people started thinking this was a big deal. And Lance got into a couple back and forth because of it, because of his evaluation and mentioning that. And people started saying, oh, well, then, you know, he's going to be terrible and he's going to fumble and everything like that. And Lance said, just go back and look at how many times he fumbled in his college career and realize it's not an issue.
I loved his tweet. Considering retirement after I was informed the football will be slipping out of my tiny hands, please keep me in your thoughts. So funny to own that.
And then Patrick Mahomes followed it up by going, yeah, so far so good with me and my tiny hands too. So I believe in you.
I mean, Burrow only, and I say only has 250,000 followers. And for that to get retweeted 37,000 times, that's quality stuff
right
there.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, that's a funny-ass tweet. Good for him for owning that, too.
But again, during the combine, this is when we see the totally random stats and you know, all the different measurements and things. People want to make a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why I mean, even when they meet the media, it's like, how many times are you going to ask a question that's tougher and more hard-hitting than what the teams are asking behind closed doors?
Yeah.
I always enjoy that, though. I do enjoy, like, when it leaks out the teams that tried to cross the line a little too much and ask
crazy questions.
The crazy questions.
It makes them look bad.
Yeah, it really does. But this is what these guys are subjected to. They know the payday's coming. They know that they're going to take it to the next level and fulfill their dream. But to get to that level from now to then, it isn't exactly fun and games all the time.
If you're a team like the Bears or maybe the Bucks, if they move on from Jameis Winston, do you try to draft or do you make a run at Dak Prescott? Assuming you have the cap space or can figure out how to make the cap space.
It's an interesting question because Stephen Jones went out and said that ever since their last conversations that when they cut everything off during the season last year, they have not spoken since. And Dak has said that the offer the Cowboys came out with was low 30s and that he was done with it after that and just kind of said, we'll let the situation play out. And most people around the NFL are saying if he expects to get close to that $40 million a year range, it's going to have to be elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because of contracts on the books, Amari Cooper still to be signed, Zeke Elliott was signed last year. Boy, I don't know, man.
Let me hit you with this. The Bucks have $84 million in cap. Bears have 26. They're probably out. Bucks have $84 million, almost $85 million in cap space. So that could be where, okay, you've got Mike Evans, you've got Bruce Arians, you had Dak Prescott to that offense, and you saw Jameis Winston at the 30-and-30 guy, 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. Right. It could be a prolific offense. If I'm the Bucks, I sit down and have some serious discussions with Dak Prescott.
Well, you know the one that they're already saying they're talking to that's a perfect fit is Phillip Rivers because of the fact that he's moved the whole family to Florida.
Again, but he's also older.
Bruce Arians did a lot when he had an older quarterback in the name of Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
That he could take a guy like Rivers.
Phillip Rivers is no Kurt Warner, sir.
Ooh, boy. I don't know, man. I don't know if I'd agree with that. You know, if we get the Rivers we got last year that it looked like he was really falling off.
Yeah, the old guy.
Right, but when you put Mike Evans and the receiving core around and all and the weapons Tampa Bay has, I think Phillip Rivers could work with that.
Which would you, as a direction, would you rather take a chance on an aging guy or the number one free agent who's also a quarterback who also was pretty prolific in the passing game that didn't have a lot? I mean, he had Amari Cooper, but it was a run-oriented offense, we were told.
But keep in mind, the Cowboys can franchise Dak.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, and they can do it for two straight years. So it doesn't necessarily mean he'd hit the free agent market. And I'm pretty sure Mike McCarthy, who's been a big fan of Dak Prescott, didn't take the job.
If you're the Cowboys, though, you got to be careful because this is what happened to Washington.
With Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, you start playing that franchise game tag and you can't move forward. You're stuck in limbo and you know that it's going to become too pricey to keep him. So at what point do you just go, do you want to end up like the Redskins or do you want to just cut your losses now?
Well, and I think because they have so many financial liability, they're on the hook for with so many different contracts, too. It makes it difficult for them to just, because we said all along, they can't just pay everybody.
Yeah.
And they've been paying a lot of people. So they've got to somehow try, and it doesn't seem like Dak's going to work with them. So that's going to be interesting to see because it doesn't look like, you know, Dak wants to be real, you know, like Tom Brady-esque. In terms of trying to work with the team so that there's more money for others.
Mm-hmm.
I think he believes as a guy that wasn't a high first round pick that this is his time to get paid and he's going to go get it.
So we have breaking news.
Do tell.
We need to give to the peeps. Phil Yates tweeting out mere minutes ago that Bill O'Brien is giving up play calling duties.
What?
Yeah.
Does this mean you're coming back in the fold?
No, because he's still here.
Oh.
But the tweet says from Phil Yates, who is, I see the blue check mark.
Yes.
Texans head coach Bill O'Brien announced that offensive coordinator Tim Kelly will call plays next season. O'Brien had previously called plays throughout his tenure in Houston.
It's a step in the right direction. You're going to be a Texans fan in no time, Barry Laminack.
Here's the thing is, do we really believe that? Or is this just placating?
Well, I thought the same thing.
I don't believe it.
He's still a Bill O'Brien guy, and they're still sitting on the same sideline on the headsets. So he can say it all he wants, so it deflects crap from last year.
The head coach is always going to be able to say, I want to run the ball here. And what play you choose to run the ball is your decision. But the head coach gets to say, we're going for it on fourth down here. We're going to kick the field goal here. I'm going to throw it here. It's third and 10. Let's throw the ball. Or, it's third and 10. Run the ball. Be creative with it, but figure it out. So he's still going to have that. So maybe he lets Tim Kelly choose which running play is going to get stuffed up the middle. Great. But he still has that final decision.
Yeah, the thing that I have a problem with, and I think you're right, though, Nick, he's making it at least look like it's a step in the right direction. But I think until you get an offensive coordinator that isn't a hand-picked Bill O'Brien guy that he can control like a puppet, it doesn't mean anything.
But every head coach is going to hand-pick their OC.
Yeah, let's say
he's lying and he's not giving up play calling duties. Mm-hmm. How do you hide that? Like, how do you say I'm not calling the plays, but you really are? I mean,
unless the players spill the
beans. And it's kind
of
a bold move, isn't it?
Well, so when you watch the Chiefs, you see that Andy Reid has his play sheet, right? But you also see that Eric Bieniemy had his play sheet. So you know that there was discussions and you know that they're listening. So that if I'm Bill O'Brien, that's my excuse at least. As I go back when people question it, well, you're not calling plays. Why do you have a play sheet? Well, it's not unheard of. And so, yeah, you don't know for sure.
There could be like a play calling system and then he approves or disapproves
exactly.
It.
Yeah, yeah. I think
or he says ahead of time, hey, run the ball. Let's either do a draw or an end around or whatever. Or there's a section on the play sheet. Yeah, whatever you want from the green section. But we need to. That's where we need the direction we need to head. There's a ton of different ways it could happen.
And
I just don't believe it.
I think that, you know, unless one of the players spills the beans and says who's really calling the plays
right,
or how it's really coming down when they need a play called in a tight situation, then we'll never know. But, you know, I think for a lot of ways he's trying to cover his own ass and trying to get people to lighten up going forward based on what happened last year in the playoffs and otherwise.
I don't know. I'm not believing it.
Okay.
I mean, Clarence said, but didn't he say that after last year? And I can't remember if he did.
I think it was 2 years ago that he was going to give him up, right? And then he took him back.
So, I mean, we're kind of discussing that now. I mean, we're kind of questioning it right now. So we're just going by the report. That's what Phil Yates said, and he announced it. So that's a confirmed report. And I think Bill O'Brien will say that he at least said that.
And Barry, I understand your point about you because you're right. You know, every head coach is going to hire their OC. But if it was an OC like a Todd Haley, or a guy
that's a good point.
You know, that is experienced and also a guy that's got his own way of thinking, right, then it would be something to me. But because this guy seems more like just a Bill O'Brien puppet protege, that it's not going to mean a whole lot.
Yep.
So we'll see how it goes.
All right, did you realize T.J. Yates was the an offensive assistant on this team?
On the Texans?
Yeah.
I think they just keep him there in case they need an emergency quarterback.
I had no idea. Huh. I really had no idea. In this article that Nick gave us the link to, it says O'Brien also said offensive assistant T.J. Yates will be assistant quarterback coach now.
Interesting.
And he'll be the practice squad quarterback.
That's who's helping Deshaun Watson get better. T.J.
There's a man that Yates. Led his team in the playoffs, brother. Got himself a dub. Don't ever forget T.J. Yates.
Texans, he
has a job for life. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. It's hour number 2, 3-hour show. Usual Suspects. Don't go anywhere. Right here on ESPN 97.5.
Hello!
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Roll through the first half of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Tuesday in H-Town. As we're just running the gamut.
H-Town till I drown.
No rain in the forecast, Barry.
Good.
You'll have to look elsewhere. I thought of you when I saw this story.
No, yep. Here we go.
No, this is one that you've partaken in the past. You'll figure out why the correlation is there, okay? Baltimore Ravens guard Bradley Bozeman, who's been kind of on a world tour or at least a nationwide tour on an anti-bullying campaign that he partakes in. As he's traveling the country, he's checking out different cuisine, and he stumbled across a restaurant in Amarillo, Texas. I'm not sure if you're aware of it or not. But
I do know where that is.
The Big Texan Steak Challenge came to his attention.
Yep.
And as we've talked about in all these different eating contests before, it's a 72-ounce steak, a shrimp cocktail, a baked potato, salad, a buttered roll, and you must complete it all in 1 hour. And when you sit down at the table and the food is presented, you may not get up.
Yeah, you can't go boo-boo. You can't go throw up. You can't do none of that.
Yeah.
Just if you're wondering, that's a 4.5-pound steak.
4.5 pounds
of steak.
72 ounces, yep. And again, the rule clearly states once you've started, you are not allowed to stand up, leave your table, or have anyone else touch the meal.
And then you get a shirt.
He got it all right. He finished it. And he said, I knew it was going to be tough. I didn't think it was going to be that tough. The last bite was rough, really rough. But he did it. He got the T-shirt. And he did it in the appropriate amount of time. Oh, my God.
There's no way I could do that. Somebody had tweeted us. I think it was Brother Bear. That was like, hey, speaking of when we were talking about hamburgers earlier, do you think you could tackle a 3-pound burger from Fuddruckers? And I was like, I think I could do a 3-pound burger, not fries and a shake and all that stuff, but a 72-ounce steak plus all that other stuff? No. Man.
Yeah, nope. That's a lot.
Yeah, there's just no way.
I don't even know how they would cook a 72-ounce steak. I guess they slow cook it, I guess.
Man, probably like a pig. Like you have to get a spigot
around. Just spin it around.
Man.
I guess so.
They show
a picture of it, and it's a large piece of meat.
Yeah, it doesn't.
There you go.
Well, hey, speaking of that, why is Dick Pound trending
on
Twitter?
I heard you say it before the show. I don't know why.
There's a bunch of weird stuff all at once trending on Twitter. When I was doing show prep, there was Dick Pound, Hot Pockets, and hashtag bisexual men exist. And I didn't know if these were all trending because of each other or individually.
Safe to say you did a little research?
I was like, is that like an Alabama Hot Pocket or is that just like the Hot Pockets? And then, so the Hot Pockets is the Hot Pocket. I'll explain why each of these are trending.
Okay.
But the Hot Pockets is the Hot Pocket heiress is in trouble because she apparently is caught up in a scandal, a college admission scandal.
Oh, like Lori Loughlin?
Yeah. And so could you imagine if you're... claim to fame is, do you know who my dad is? He invented the Hot Pocket. I'm probably laughing at you. And I'm going to be like, well, now you have to pay double to get into this school.
Yeah, some parents would.
Not a big deal. Although I imagine that the Hot Pocket person is worth a lot of money.
You would think so. If what, Cy Sperling just died, and he was not only the hair club president, but yeah, he was a member. But they said he was worth, right? He was worth like, I think, $20-30 million.
So I hit like, who invented the Hot Pocket on Google's, and it says Paul and David Mirage invented Hot Pockets in 83.
Genius.
And released it I'm good at English. And released the product under their brand Chef America. Nestle acquired the company in 2002, paying $2.6 billion.
Oh, wow, man.
For the right to sell Hot Pockets.
Oh, my goodness.
But I would still be like, yeah, that's Hot Pocket money. I would just, that's not going to carry any.
I still eat clout. Hot Pockets.
Man,
they're terrible for you, but I don't care.
The problem is you got to wait so long. If you don't, you burn your face and your mouth and your tongue. Yeah, not. So the other hashtags were bisexual men exist. So apparently no one knew that bisexual men existed. And now there's a hashtag out.
I can confirm that.
That they exist.
Yeah.
You know a bisexual man?
Maybe.
Wow. Well, is he tweeting today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I'll look for the retweet. And then the last one was Dick Pound is trending on, and I just kind of,
we already covered the steak story.
Nope.
No.
Dick Pound is a member of the IOC, which is
International
Olympic Committee. And Dick Pound is saying there's going to be none of this foolishness. He's basically on record as saying that we might be looking at a cancellation of the Olympics because of the coronavirus.
So you're basically telling me that Dick Pound is worried about a virus. If I'm understanding you correctly, I'm just trying to get clarity here.
That's pretty much what it amounts to. Yeah, I wish I could tell you no, but yeah, Dick Pound is worried about the virus. How little thought do you put into a name as a parent? If your last name is Pound and you name your kid Dick.
I mean, it's got to be Richard.
Richard,
it's
just that, right?
It has to be Richard.
And that's one where you either still go by Rich, Richie, or Richard, and you are adamant about it.
But once you get the name Richard, we all know.
Yep.
Everyone
it's
calls
still
you
on
Dick.
Their parents, on his parents.
I mean, it's, and listen, clone, save your texts and tweets because I don't want to see the Dick Trickle texts. We know that exists.
Richard William Duncan Dick Pound. That's his name.
Duncan Dick Pound sounds like the best name.
The Duncan is just, I just looked it up
on
Duncan
Wikipedia.
Duncan Dick Pound is the best porn name. Old Duncan Dick over
ever.
There. Old Duncan Dick Pound. That is literally the now I see why his parents are the coolest parents.
Duncan Dick Pound stars in On Golden Blonde.
That's the best porn name ever. You made that up.
No, I swear it's on his wiki. Richard William Duncan Dick Pound.
Wow.
How old is Dick Pound, Nick?
77 years old.
And he's still employed.
God, I bet he's wrinkly.
Very.
And you talk veiny. About me.
Wrinkly, wrinkly and veiny.
Do you think he made that comment in vain?
Duncan Dick Pound. Guys, I don't know about you,
it's
but
a ballsy maneuver.
If my name was, you tried too hard on that one.
Okay.
If my name included,
did you say hard?
If my name included Duncan Dick Pound, you're not calling me by anything else. You're not calling me Richard. What was his name? Richard
William.
Yeah, you're not calling me William. You're not calling me Bill. You're not calling me Richard. You're not calling me Duncan. You're calling me Duncan Dick Pound. It's also, I mean, that's some.
Hey, babe, you bored tonight?
Boy, you really got a lot to live up to. If you're Duncan Dick Pound.
you love saying it. You're just going
to. I'm going to wear it out.
Yeah.
You just. Wow.
By the way, Cy Sperling at the time of his passing.
Yeah.
Worth $27.6 million.
Also, someone just Googled Alabama Hot Pocket, and I apologize to that person.
You did that.
Yeah.
To me.
Well.
This is,
don't Google Duncan Dick Pound. Don't do an image search.
Is he bald?
See.
That'll do it for the Duncan first half of the show. Pound. Still got 90 minutes to go. Lots more fun and jocularity to get to in the second half. Don't go anywhere. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Second half of the show starts now on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5, spanning the globe and running the gamut of giving you the latest and greatest in sports news and otherwise, including, why is that face coming my way?
Spanning the globe?
Yeah, I've adopted it from the former Jim McKay Open to ABC's Wide World of Sports, when the skier does the whole...
I know exactly what it's
smash and grab as he goes down in a heap. Some news out of one of the primary opponents to the Houston Astros for the American League, as we've mentioned, the New York Yankees. The bad news the Yankees got about pitcher Luis Severino got worse. He had forearm discomfort. The team has now announced that the right-hander needs Tommy John surgery.
Not good.
That's a big deal. Now, the Yankees are already without James Paxton, out at least through April, as he went under a procedure to remove a cyst as well as a microscopic lumbar surgery in his back. So now they're down two starters, so you really needed Gerrit Cole.
That is, I mean, that's a big blow.
Yeah.
When you think about what this team thought they would have going into the season versus now what it looks like they might have, at least for a while, it makes you wonder if they maybe don't make a move.
I think with, again, when we start talking about, like when we were talking about the Bears in football, when you have as much talent as they have.
They feel they're okay.
No, I feel like the winning is now time. They've had opportunities slip by in the last 3 years. And so if you went out and spent all that money on Gerrit Cole and the expectation is that's going to get you over the hump to get to where you haven't been in quite a while to the World Series, and you lose two pitchers regardless, they, you know, once for the year, Severino's definitely done for at least the year and more. But, you know, for Paxton to be out at least through April and you don't know how he's going to respond to the surgery and coming back, I think they got to start kicking the tires and see who's still out there, what can we still do?
I mean... You wonder, do they think, you know, is your 1-2 punch of Cole and Tanaka enough, first of all? Do you need to do more than that? Do you think you can roll with what you got, spend your money elsewhere? I think they feel like that, obviously, offensively, no problems, as long as they can all stay healthy. But, you know, it was a bit of an issue last year for them as far as pitching. Even with all the injuries that they had, they still managed to score a bunch of runs. So, we'll see. I mean, they had that guy that, what, he got suspended for...
Herman.
Yeah. For, what, 80 games 80, or something
81
like
games for domestic abuse.
So, again, and he was considered a guy who they might be relying on, at least from someone. So, we'll see.
Well, he had a live arm last year. He did a lot for them. So, yeah, you're right. Add him to the mix as well on the suspension for half the season. So, now you've got three pitchers that at least two of them factored in to the starting rotation, maybe all three did.
Yeah, I mean, Herman could have been your fifth starter because you think about who they have and who was available.
Tanaka, Severino, Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so Yankees have some pitching issues. So maybe that allows the Astros, you know, a chance to either catch up or, because we know that, you know, that with such a late start in hiring a general manager, all the best laid plans about how they were going to spend the offseason getting another starter to add to the mix so that they could, whether it be the fifth starter or, you know, however it factors in with McCullers coming back and if he's healthy, they needed one more arm losing Cole. They didn't have a chance to do that because James Click's hiring took so long.
Well, I don't think if you're the Astros, you're still coming off of a World Series, so you're not looking to chase the Yankees. Obviously, you're looking to get better, but you have to fill the void of Gerrit Cole leaving. But other than that, I think if you're the Astros, you probably feel like they need to be chasing us, right?
It's a different
even
set
if
of
they got better, you don't
I
chase
think
them.
On an average year. Yes, I think this year maybe you're. you're thinking about it a little differently because of all the outside pressure and all the eyes on them and all those things. I mean, look, there's a Colin McHugh floating out there that doesn't have a team yet. Not that he's supposed to, like, knock your socks off as a starter, but he's been there, done that. If you, you know, start running out of options.
You're suggesting the Yankees?
You know what? There's a guy that they don't have to give up anything to at least kick the tires on that Garrett Cole can tell you something about.
Yeah.
Because he did have some good years here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's also a reason that the Astros didn't bring him back. But
sure. But I'm just saying, I mean, that's what you're getting. It's basically what it amounts to if you're Brian Cashman. You're either going to give up more and start depleting your farm system more to try and find somebody, or you're going to go look at that list of unrestricted free agents that haven't found a home yet and go, there's got to be someone in there with some miles of experience that has a little something left in the tank that it can you can at least check on.
That's the question, is who is still available?
Where's the Jeff Green of the Major League Baseball pitching staffs that is a free agent that the Yankees could acquire?
Right.
So they could step right in and be something.
I'm trying to pull up who is available. Free agent, unrestricted free agents.
I mean, look, Wade Miley's got a job after the way pitchers. He finished the year. So, you know, it could be worse. There's got to be someone out there.
Yeah.
I gave you one in McHugh.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at, so just according to SpotTrack, 2020 free agents that are available. CC Sabathia.
He's retired.
Oh, yeah. Jason Vargas, 37 years old, probably had the best war of anybody else on this list. But it's, you know, it's not a great list. Danny Salazar, Aaron Brooks.
Aaron Brooks was a hell of a point guard for a
season. Rookie Davis. Yeah, there's not, I don't, Clay Buchholz, Irvin Santana, who's 37. It's not a good list of.
Well, there's a guy that at least has experience.
Edwin Jackson.
I don't know what his durability is.
Edwin Jackson, who lost
it. Who's pitched for 93 teams.
Yeah, there's not a lot of guys. Now, Colin McHugh's not on that list, but maybe he's listed as a reliever?
Maybe.
Yeah, he's listed
as a reliever. That was his last job.
Yeah, he's listed as a reliever. They have Andrew Cashner, Sam Dyson. Colin McHugh is listed fifth on relievers as far as 2019 war and available free agents. But he's a guy that you know that could start.
Right. But, yeah, they might be really
scouring the
market.
But based off of that list, it might be worth a flyer on a Colin McHugh.
McHugh might be better than all those guys. Yeah. So that's something they may want to look at. But, you know, and then, again, is he labeled as a guy that was part of the whole, even though it wasn't involving him, you know, is it tough for him to get a job because he's coming from the Astros?
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. By the way, someone that was number 93 for the Astros that wasn't good enough to have his name on the back of the jersey just gave up a three-run bomb.
Please,
Astros are going to lose.
Please stop giving spring training updates.
No, I learned it from Charlie. It's what people want.
No one cares about these games.
Not no one. There are some people out there.
Who? Name, if they cared, they'd be listening to that and not us.
No,
trust me.
No.
They don't care.
No. They
no,
can also
trust me.
They could be broadcast connoisseurs, too.
No. No one cares that a dude
we're
with
giving
no
them the
name
best
on his
of both
back.
Worlds. We'll give them brief updates on the
Stop
baseball.
It.
They don't have to listen. They listen to us instead.
Stop
and they get
it.
Entertained more.
Stop it.
Okay. Well, just throwing it out
Please
there.
Please don't do any more while I'm here.
That means that's when another you, an hour and 20 minutes,
it's
sir.
It's terrible.
Are you leaving?
No.
All I did was 3 seconds.
That's like the fifth time he's done it
what?
Today?
Fifth?
Yeah.
I might have spearheaded this whole situation yesterday when Jose Altuve got plunked in the last, in the spring game yesterday.
Well, I'll blame you. That's
so you can Look, blame me for giving the intro.
I'll blame
up there.
You then. That's fine. We'll carry on. All right, we're rolling through hour number 2, 3-hour show. Plenty more to get to. Don't go anywhere. It's the usual suspects. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, rolling through our number 2, 3-hour show. It is Barry, Nick, and Joel in the studio on a Tuesday. I told you guys I watched the whole Kobe, or not the whole thing, but I skipped around and watched the speeches at the Kobe Memorial yesterday. This girl, Sabrina Ionescu.
Oh.
I'm telling you what. I mean, you're so conditioned for all those years, Gina Auriemma winning like 11 national titles, that, you know, they're just the, you know, obviously, and Gianna wanted to play for Gino, and he spoke. But crazy, she speaks at the memorial yesterday, then hightails it to Stanford. Evidently, Oregon had a plane. Phil Knight can do these kind of things, but they had a plane waiting for her so she could get from the ceremony, much like James Harden, all the way to Stanford, where they had a big game, and the Ducks are pretty highly ranked.
Is that illegal?
I was wondering that.
Can you have a guy who doesn't – he's just an – a donor for the college, fly somebody from one city to another on their plane and not charge them?
I believe you can, because I believe that before – and I think even with the Cougs, I think there's been alums and donors that have donated the use of their plane. I think even like Oklahoma State, because of the fact that
T. Boone Pickens.
Yeah, because of T. Boone Pickens and his planes. That I want to say, even because I think Oklahoma State, when Eddie Sutton was coaching, they had a plane go down once.
Okay.
It was a private plane.
Okay.
So I think it is legal. But I was wondering the same thing when I heard that, because I'm thinking immediately, Phil Knight, Nike, sent the plane to help the Oregon kid out.
Right.
But for this kind of thing, I think you kind of you give it a pass, because she was really tight with the Bryants.
I mean, I'm with you. But you just know the NCAA could screw this up and make it an issue if they wanted to. But if it's an issue to begin with, and I guess it's not based off what you're saying.
So, yeah, for whatever reason, and the head coach's wife was her escort.
Oh.
They went the night before, stayed overnight in L.A., went to the memorial. She spoke. Then they hightailed it to the airport and got back in time to get on a plane to get to Stanford so that they could play. She could play in a game last night. The irony here is that she didn't eat all day. They said she couldn't eat. They tried to give her food before the game. She was throwing it up. So she goes on the court, and all she does is put up a triple-double and became the only men's or women's player in the history of NCAA basketball with 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, and 1,000 assists.
Wow.
So she set the record. I think she had 21, 12, and 11 last night. But a mammoth game. She was going to be a high draft pick in the WNBA draft and passed so she could play her senior year at Oregon. And like I said, they are one of the top 10 teams in the nation. But that's pretty impressive.
Very impressive.
Yeah. So
especially considering everything that was surrounding her and what she was, where she was and all that.
Yeah, it was neat. Her parents were in the stands. And again, she made a connection with Kobe and Gianna. And it ended up being a longer standing relationship. And then that happened last night. So not only was James Harden the guy that went to the festivities and then performed well last night in the game for the Rockets, but she actually spoke. And you know, as just a college kid that's going to speak.
That's nerve-wracking.
Just think about it, just speaking in front of that many people. But then when you're scanning the audience, because they say it might be the greatest collection of talent, basketball and otherwise, in one room at one time. But specifically from a basketball perspective, all of the stars that were in attendance yesterday.
Pretty crazy.
And the other funny thing that was part of that was Gianna loved her, but she had no interest in the Oregon Ducks. So Kobe and Gianna went to a Ducks game, and they sat behind the bench, everything like that. And after the game, they went and said, "Now, Gianna, do you want your picture taken with the whole team? We'll line them all up for you." And she goes, "No, I'm good." She turned him down.
She knew what she wanted.
She knew what she wanted. She was going to UConn and UConn only, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was a neat story.
How great is it that your dad is Kobe Bryant and can get you all those things?
Well, and the other story that came from the eulogies yesterday delivered, I guess you could call it, but Gino Auriemma spoke, and he wanted to point out, he said he had a whole thing where he was going to talk about the basketball perspective, and he said he just couldn't do it. And he said the greatest thing that touches on what you said, Barry, about Kobe the dad versus Kobe the player, they flew to Storrs, Connecticut so that she could see a UConn women's game and she could, after the game, be in the locker room. The minute they walked in the locker room, he got as far away from her as he could and stood by the door so that she could just have her moment being her and associating in a dream situation with her favorite team and not have any kind of implication that, oh, it's Kobe's kid, that's why they're doing it or anything else. And he said that just shows you what kind of dad he really was.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a lot to take away from there. Lisa thought that Gino Auriemma's speech was the best because he didn't read it and the way he presented it. But I told you guys before I had even seen it, just the way Jordan reacted. But having listened to the speech itself, it was amazing.
Yeah.
What he said, how much he opened up. The fact that he basically admitted to the fact, like, a big brother bullies a little brother, that, you know, the requests and the calls. He said the calls were coming 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, 3:30, 4 in the morning. He's like, seriously, bro? Like, you're calling me and you're asking me questions about what drills I was working on when I was 12? And Kobe's like, yeah, I need to know for my daughter. He's like, I was working on baseball when I was 12. And then Kobe had some cuss words for him, but that he said eventually he turned from being that kind of tough love brother to the guy that realized, hey, this kid wants to be like me because he's got the passion.
Mm-hmm.
And the so passion that he had was something that he was able to wrap his arms around and embrace.
Interesting. Do you believe him?
I do.
Okay.
But as Lisa and I
And I only ask because you've known him, you've met him, and we talked a little bit about this earlier in the week about how, or maybe it was yesterday or Friday, but we, you know, Jordan didn't want to be...
Right.
So he kind of admitted that at first he was kind of a dick to Kobe.
Oh, yeah. And he didn't want to help Kobe. It was annoying. It was perturbing. All those other things.
Okay.
And at one point they showed Vanessa's face, and you could see because in her speech she was very clear in stating he was not only my best friend, I was his sounding board. So she knew everything he thought, whether it be for Shaq or MJ or otherwise. And when Jordan was making these comments, she had made a face to know that there was probably a lot more truth than he was even leading on in that situation. But Lisa and I talked about it, and I totally, totally believe this. He was annoyed as hell early on, and it bothered him because this kid walked like him, talked like him, emulated everything about him, and said he was going to be him. And that, obviously, when you feel like you're setting a career up to be the greatest of all time, and all of a sudden this kid comes in, you know,
and has the potential to dethrone you.
Yeah, you probably don't like it.
No.
But then at the end of the day, when you realize as you're fading away, this could be part of my legacy too, that I wasn't, you know, because the word's going to get out sooner or later.
Sure.
Michael either stiffed me or he was cool to me.
Yeah.
And he's already
like
got
the whole Favre-Rogers thing.
Sure. And same Michael's thing. As I told you guys, Michael's got a reputation too as being a guy that has a very tight circle. And wasn't going to get into too much with too many and give a lot of people the time of day. Plus, he doesn't like giving interviews. He doesn't like doing all those things. He's the anti-Charles in terms of media and attention and all those things. So the fact that he opened up as much as he did speaking and then also was as honest as he was amazing to me to see, you know, because in my mind, he's the greatest of all time.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So that was just something I thought would be my last takeaway from what all the things that happened yesterday in the memorial.
Speaking of basketball, and we talked a little college basketball, I thought you and Nick both would enjoy this. Five surprising teams that could reach the Final Four.
Okay.
Now, you know me. I don't keep up with a lot of college basketball, so I'm going to have to take some of these. I'm going to take their word for it and your feedback if you want. Right. But here's the five surprising teams that could reach the Final Four this year. Number five, this is according to Larry Brown Sports. Number five, Northern Iowa. No clue.
I mean, it's a smaller school. They've always had a really solid program. To say that they could make the Final Four, I think, is a reach.
Number four, Illinois.
Illinois is having a good year. Illinois has been down forever.
And close to the top of the Big Ten.
Yeah, they're getting to the top. They have had a couple upsets recently. There's a more realistic choice.
Colorado is at number three.
They're okay.
Okay. Number two, U of H.
Was shocked to see. I figured they would be in there somewhere if you're going to bring it up, but I'd be incredibly shocked.
This surprised me. It says that a couple things. It says the list of teams that rank in the top 25 in both offensive and defensive efficiency includes names you'd expect like Kansas, Baylor, San Diego State, Michigan State, and Arizona, joined by Houston. Now, it surprises me because I don't think you would expect them to be in the class of those teams offensively, even if it's offensive efficiency. Defensively, sure. And having been there and watched them live, they are smothering. They get after you defensively. Offensively is a little surprising. They also said in here that that they've lost – the four conference losses they have were by a combined six total points. That's impressive too, even in the conference that they're in. So
American Athletic.
Yeah, I mean I thought that's great.
Here's what we said after you went
For the record, number one is Creighton.
And Creighton's a solid team. Yeah. Here's what we said after you went to the U of H game. The bottom line was, and I even threw this at Nick, but and not in a belligerent way. I did this because in years past, you could give me the best two players on the Cougs. Because offensively, they were borderline NBA type players. And you go all the way back to Rob Gray.
Yeah.
Okay? And that was a Sweet 16 team. This year, their calling card is not one or two of those players. Their calling card is their defense. On any given night in the tournament, wherever you got to play, and maybe you got to play a 9 a.m. game or an 11 a.m. game, defense travels.
Yeah.
So you can catch big-name teams. But I don't think offensively, one, they don't have a go-to guy. And more importantly, two, I don't think they shoot the three as good as they've shot it in the past. Yeah. Where I think Final Four might be a stretch, but they could upset some teams.
In the article, they talk about Caleb Mills and Marcus Sasser kind of emerging as the real scoring threats for them. And I believe it was Sasser in the Tulsa game.
That got hot in the second half.
Yeah, and he just came out, and I don't think he missed his first 13 shots of the second half or something like that, or maybe it was his first 10. But it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And it's good to see U of H and the Cougars on a list like this because it lets you know they're viable and they could. I mean, obviously they're a top 25 team. They got as high as 20 this year already. They could make some noise, and we're gonna find out what they are with these last two home games with Cincinnati and Memphis on
Memphis
the schedule.
Is a big one
they got Memphis twice.
No, they lost the barn burner to Memphis last weekend in Memphis.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a 1-point game. They missed a shot at the buzzer, I think. So that's a big game. But I mean, think about where they were just a few years ago before Kelvin Sampson. The fact that we're even talking about the Cougs making
another
run.
Especially with who they lost last year.
And he got a McDonald's All-American to transfer from Kansas and the way he's recruiting. Look, it could be a lot worse than what you got going with winning seasons and Kelvin Sampson. So
Absolutely. That's
a good thing to know if you're a Cougar fan. All right, we got an hour to go in the show. 60 minutes on the clock when we come back. Don't go anywhere. We'll take you home till 4. Blitz takes you till 7 right here on ESPN 97.5.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this special message.
Well, what's up?
You're listening to ESPN 97.5, and we proudly hydrate with C-Force water.
I'll drink to that.